Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from The Voice of America. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Anna Mateo, Phil Dierking, and Jonathan Evans. But first, the Higher Education Report with help from Katie Weaver.
Since 1964, colleges and universities in the United States have used the Test of English as a Foreign Language, or TOEFL, to measure an international applicant's level of English. Universities in English-speaking European countries began using the International English Language Testing System, or IELTS, in 1989. These two tests have been the main choices for English ability testing in higher education admissions for international students until now. In recent years, several companies have developed new English language tests that are low cost and easy to use. And they aim to do more than just offer greater choice in the admissions process. Duolingo creates software that teaches users many different languages, including English. In 2014, the company launched its own test of English language ability. Jennifer Dewar works with Duolingo, helping to develop the test. She formerly worked as an admissions official at Washington University in St. Louis, Missouri. The school is one of hundreds of colleges, universities, and other organizations in and outside the U.S. that now accept the test results for international admissions into their study programs. Dewar says Duolingo created the test to lower the barriers to higher education for people worldwide, especially those in developing countries.
The TOEFL and the IELTS cost between about $180 and $240 to take. They are given in a limited number of centers around the world. Some test takers have to travel to take the tests, adding to the costs. Duolingo offers its test entirely over the internet for $49. All test takers need is access to a computer with a microphone, listening device, and self-facing camera. I don't think we're in a position at this point to continue to support those barriers and not make education more accessible for people all over the world, Dewar told VOA. The TOEFL, IELTS, and Duolingo measure a person's English reading, listening, speaking, and writing abilities. But it takes about 45 minutes to complete a Duolingo test, as compared to 3 or 4 hours for the TOEFL or IELTS. Dewar says this is possible because Duolingo uses artificial intelligence to adapt to test takers' abilities, using fewer questions to measure their skills. David Payne is a vice president for Educational Testing Service, the nonprofit organization that operates the TOEFL test. He agrees that improving access to higher education is important. But he says general English knowledge is not the only thing college and university study programs require. Schools need to know how successful a student will be using the level of academic English that their professors will expect of them. In 2015, researchers at Temple University in Philadelphia and Singapore's Nanyang Technological University found the Duolingo test to be a weak measurement of that.
Payne said, "We would argue that delivering a high-quality test to the academic market provides the value that is necessary to make a really important decision. And saving $100 to $150 on a test doesn't seem worth it in terms of the relative expense of the test versus what you're going to pay for tuition and fees and room and board." In addition, he notes that test security has become an especially important issue. In the last 3 years, there have been several cases in which people were caught lying about their identities in order to take English ability tests for others. Payne argues that there is still no technology that can better prove a test taker's identity than having them take the test in person. John Sagoda is with the TESOL International Association, the world's largest professional organization for teachers of English as a second language. He says schools will have to do their own research to decide if any newer test options can perform as well as traditional ones. It really comes down to a question for the universities about what's available, what's the quality of the services and products that are available, and are they satisfied with what's in the marketplace, Sagoda noted. Sagoda added, only time will tell if a given test is worse at measuring a student's likelihood for success. But in general, having choices is important. Choice is exactly what made Duolingo and other non-traditional English tests appealing to Emerson College in Boston. The school accepts both TOEFL and IELTS results for its English language requirements. Emerson also accepts the Cambridge English Assessment, the Pearson Test of English Academic, and, as of 2017, Duolingo.
Michael Lynch is Emerson's Director of Undergraduate Admissions. He said, "We are interested in expanding our international presence. We do see ourselves as a global institution. And it really comes down to access for students and options. Many experienced language learners may see higher education as their ultimate goal. But there are millions of people who are in the early or middle stages of English proficiency who need to measure their progress," says Donna Al-Hadidi. She is the academic director for the EF-SET, an English language ability test created by the language instruction company EF Education First. Education First started the free, internet-based EF-SET test in 2014. The adaptive test takes 50 minutes and only measures a test taker's English reading and listening abilities. The purpose of this test is to give all learners a general idea of their current English ability level. Because our test can get English proficiencies for a large number of people at any given time, and because of the accessibility of the test, we've found that it actually caters to a lot of need out there, said Al-Hadidi. Companies, organizations, and even governments have used the EF-SET for their own purposes, she notes. This includes VOA Learning English, which has a partnership with EF to use the test on its website. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Katie Weaver.
Now, the VOA Learning English program, Words and Their Stories. Today, we will talk about two of the world's most popular drinks, coffee and tea. Now, many people are loyal coffee drinkers. They cannot imagine starting their morning without what some call a hot cup of joe. Some people hate coffee and prefer to drink tea. Others enjoy drinking both. Whichever you prefer, know that English has some useful expressions using tea and coffee. Let's start with things around the home. The table sitting in the middle of the living room and usually in front of a sofa is called a coffee table. We never call it a tea table. There is no such thing. Even if you hate the taste of coffee and never set a coffee cup on that table, you would still call it a coffee table. Naturally, a coffee table is the perfect place for a few coffee table books. These large books usually have beautiful pictures and are meant to entertain people or make an impression on them. They are among the first things visitors see when sitting down in the living room. Many people use them as conversation pieces. You know, items that start people talking about something. Coffee, as you know, can help you feel more energized. In fact, many people use coffee to wake up in the morning. And that is where we get the idiom, wake up and smell the coffee. We say this to people who are not accepting a situation as it really is. They are not being realistic. They need to face facts. You can say it to someone or about someone. If you tea drinkers out there want to stay away from coffee expressions, you can also tell someone to simply get real, or as we said earlier, face facts. These two are more direct, and while wake up and smell the coffee can be used in a lighthearted, funny way, get real and face facts both sound more serious. Let's hear how these expressions can be used.
Who was at the door?
It was Helen.
Oh, did she ask to move back in with us again?
Yes, she did.
That's the third time this week.
She apologized again for destroying some of the furniture during that party she threw. And she made us something to eat, this cake. She really wants to move back in with us.
That woman is unbelievable. Does she have any idea how much damage she did? Our neighbors are still unhappy about that party. Next time she asks to move back in, let me deal with it.
What are you going to say to her?
I'm going to tell her to wake up and smell the coffee.
I don't think she drinks coffee.
You know what I mean. She needs to face facts. She is never, ever, ever moving back in with us.
But she makes really good cake.
Oh, get real, Meredith. If you think for 1 minute that I would live with her just because she makes good cake, then you need to wake up and smell the coffee, too.
Coffee and cake are great together. I'll start making a pot of coffee now.
Well, she does make good cake. Even if you love tea, we just don't say, wake up and smell the tea. But don't worry, for all of you tea drinkers, we have a great expression for you.
I like a nice cup of tea in the morning, for to start the day, you see. And at 11:30, well, my idea of heaven is a nice cup of tea.
If you really like something, or are really good at something, It is your cup of tea. But not so fast. That's not really the way we use it today. Yes, many years ago, when the expression came into the language, it was used in a positive way. But these days, we almost always use this expression in a negative way. So you don't say that something is your cup of tea, even if you are talking about your beloved cup of tea. If something is not your cup of tea, you simply don't like it or are not good at it. The cup of tea in the expression can mean anything. If you don't like to go camping, you could say, "Camping is not your cup of tea." If you're not good at dancing, it is not your cup of tea. In fact, if you don't like coffee, you could say it's not your cup of tea. And actually, that would be a funny way to use this expression. Now, some places are known for their coffee, and others for their tea. For example, Japan and China are famous for their tea. Their tea culture has a long history and tradition. And that is where we get our final expression for today. Some famous Chinese teas are very pricey. If you gathered all the tea in China, it would be worth a lot of money. So, if you want to say that you are unwilling to do something at any cost, you could say, "I wouldn't do it for all the tea in China." For example, if you are deathly afraid of heights, you could say, "I would not skydive for all the tea in China." This expression is simply an exaggerated or larger-than-life way of saying, "No way, I won't do it. I don't care what you offer me." Okay, we don't want anyone to accuse us of playing favorites. We already heard a conversation using a popular coffee expression. So here is a short conversation with the tea expressions we just heard.
"Tomorrow night, I'm going out to a spoken word event. Want to join me?"
Spoken word. You mean like a poetry reading?
Yeah, it's really awesome.
No thanks. Spoken word really isn't my cup of tea.
Oh, so you probably won't be interested in going to a 3-day spoken word festival next month.
Not for all the tea in China.
So that's a no?
Yes, that's a big N-O. And that brings us to the end of this Words and Their Stories. I'm Anna Mateo.
When visitors arrive in Serbia, they find that all official signs are written in Cyrillic script. But while the internet is becoming a popular way to supply information to many Serbs, use of the script is decreasing across the country. All younger people are starting to use Latin because of their phones and computers. So I don't know if there is a future for Cyrillic, says Lazar Nikolic, a 14-year-old student. The Cyrillic alphabet was created in the second half of the 9th century in what is now the former Yugoslav Republic of Macedonia. Cyrillic is used in Russia, Ukraine, Belarus, Mongolia, and a few Central Asian republics. It also is used in Bulgaria and some of the countries that formed after the breakup of Yugoslavia: Macedonia, Montenegro, Serbia, and parts of Bosnia and Herzegovina. Cyrillic was recognized as Serbia's official alphabet in the country's 2006 constitution. It states that communication between public institutions or between such agencies and the public at large must be in Cyrillic,
except for official communication with national minorities. However, the Latin-based script has become so common in Serbia that the government is fighting back. The Ministry of Culture and Information, led by Culture Minister Vladan Vukosavljevic, have proposed tightening language laws. The ministry has suggested creation of a council for the Serbian language and fining people who do not respect Serbia's mother script. The Cyrillic alphabet is being used less and less, Vukosavljevic said. It's not about enacting draconian measures, but about a reasonable correction. Take the Serbian capital, Belgrade, for example. While the government buildings have signs written in Cyrillic, Belgrade's business center is full of signs in Latin script. To fight the Latin invasion, the city government approved measures designed to help businesses that use Cyrillic. Under the plan, companies and individuals who sign rental agreements with the city can save 5% on their rent if their signs are in Cyrillic script. Starbucks and McDonald's have their own Cyrillic names in countries where this is the official script. If they feel that this is in their interest, I think it will be accepted, said Andreja Mladenovic, an advisor to Belgrade's mayor Zoran Radojičić. He spoke to the Beta news agency. The city will look much nicer, Mladenovic added. This will give a nice picture for our city to foreign tourists, and it's also a way to encourage our institutions to protect the Cyrillic script. But Ranko Bukarski, a language expert and professor at the Faculty of Philology in Belgrade, is not sure that more laws will make a difference. Bukarski notes that Cyrillic already has a place in the Constitution, while Latin script does not. He adds that, in Serbia, students are first taught Cyrillic characters, and it's almost impossible to finish high school without a good knowledge of the alphabet. Students in all schools first learn Cyrillic, and only after that, Latin. All school textbooks are in Cyrillic. That is already a very strong degree of protection. As long as there are schools in Serbia, people will know Cyrillic, he told Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Dunja Jasovic of Belgrade agrees. The 21-year-old student says that she always writes in Cyrillic, a skill she developed during her early years in school. Now, when I study at college or write notes, I always use Cyrillic. But online, or when we do something on a laptop, it's always easier to use Latin, she adds. A majority of Serbia's websites publish stories in Latin script. The Serbian National Internet Domain Registry shows that 101,648 websites have been registered on the .rs Latin script domain. The number seems huge compared to just 2,512 for the register's Cyrillic script domain. However, Jasovic says that Serbs should be proud of their language, whichever script is used. I'm Phil Dierking.
A few weeks ago, Russian Orthodox Church officials in Eastern Russia announced a project they called Bells Over Kamchatka. The announcement appeared on the website of the church's local administrative center in Kamchatka. It stated that Orthodox priests would carry out meetings at all the children's summer camps in the area before the beginning of the school year. The website's story described one priest's visit to the Vaskat camp. It told how the clergyman spoke about the history of bells in the church. He reportedly gave the children a chance to play another musical instrument
a miniature carillon. The visit was set up under a joint program between the local church and the Kamchatka Krai Ministry of Youth and Education. A week later, a man named Alexei Nikolaev appealed to the local government for legal action. He was unhappy about what he saw as the church's effort to influence his 10-year-old daughter at the same camp this summer. "I didn't care about this until it affected me personally," he said. "At summer camp, some priest spoke with my child, and this made me mad. I read about it first on local news website Cam24, and then naturally spoke to the child." Cam24 reported on August 20th that children at another camp, Metallist, had been baptized with the permission of the camp officials. In Christianity, the act of baptism shows that a person accepts Jesus Christ and has joined the church. As part of the ceremony, clergy usually place droplets of water on the person's head, or the body is briefly covered with water. Nikolaev said, "I saw several publications on the Cam24 website about how priests carried out a mass baptism of children at the camp. There were reports that members of the National Guard were kissing some religious relics." He said the relics were some sort of bones. A spokesperson for the local church admitted in the Cam24 report that there had been baptisms. The spokesperson said, 14 children from Children's Correctional Home No. 3 who were vacationing at the Metallist Children's Camp were baptized. The church also reported that religious workers were appointed as godmothers to the newly baptized children. Olga Petukova is the director of the Vaskat Camp. She told Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, that she saw no problem with the church's presentation to the children. She said, "I was personally present during the entire lecture. Father Boris Merzin came and told the children about bells in Russia and gave the children the chance to ring a church bell. I don't understand why some parents are reacting in this way. After all, this is our history, part of our life." The church refused to comment on the RFERL story. Ina Zagrebina is a lawyer who specializes in church-state relations. She is taking part in Nikolaev's appeal. Zagrebina told RFERL that Russian law bars children under the age of 14 from being drawn into the activity of religious organizations. Other laws protect children under the age of 18, she added, saying that the officials are required to react to concerns from parents of such children. Zagrebina said that prosecutors would likely be looking into the legal standing of the event and whether there was an agreement on cooperation between the camp and the church. Nikolaev noted that last year, parents at his daughter's school were asked to choose an elective class for religious and moral education. He also said that a few years ago, parents were unhappy to learn that priests were teaching in public schools. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.